sports week in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young coming to you now from our VOA headquarters in Washington, D.C. The Voice of America is once again a proud broadcasting partner of the Men's Basketball Africa League, or BAL, which ended the Sahara Conference portion of its schedule on Tuesday in Dakar, Senegal. The VOA broadcasted the Sahara Conference games on radio in five languages: English, French, Bambara, Portuguese, and Kinyarwanda. The Basketball Africa League will now take a break of just over a month before Nile Conference games begin on April 26th in Cairo, Egypt. In BAL results Tuesday at the Dakar Arena, local favorite AS Douan, which is based in Dakar, eliminated defending BAL champion U.S. Monastir of Tunisia 76-60, and Stade Malien of Mali defeated ABC Fighters of Ivory Coast 90-71. Douan and Stade Malien both advanced to the BAL playoffs in May in Kigali, Rwanda, along with the Fighters and Rwanda Energy Group. In the Sahara Conference standings, all four of those teams ended up with records of 3 wins and 2 losses, and Monastir also had a 3-2 record, but the Tunisian club missed out on the playoffs because of the loss Tuesday to Douan. The Basketball Africa League ranked the teams based on point differential in the games against each other. So Stade Malien finished on top of the table, followed by Douan, Rwanda Energy Group, ABC Fighters, Monastir, and the Nigerian club Kwara Falcons, which lost all 5 of its games. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Falcons secretary Aziz Bello said even though the team did not win a game, the Dakar competition was a positive experience.
The experience was good for the players and the coaching crew. This is the first time any of these players will appear in an international competition, and they really improved over the games. I'm very sure that by the time they get back home, they will take the lessons they've learned from this competition to improve the way they plan and train.
Despite not qualifying for the playoff of the Basketball Africa League scheduled for Kigali, Rwanda in May, were there lessons learned by Kwara Falcons from the Dakar Conference Group games?
Yes, like I said earlier, there were lessons learned, how they manage the game, the technicality of the games, the administrative aspect of the games, and everything. For the players, the coaching crew, and even the management, we learned a lot in actually structuring a club to be able to perform better.
Kwara Falcons did not do too well at its inaugural outing in the Basketball Africa League. Lots of your fans at home and abroad will not be happy with your outing. What message do you have for these fans regarding Kwara Falcons' maiden outing at the Basketball Africa League?
Yeah, for our fans home and abroad, we want to appreciate them. First of all, we want to appreciate the state government for the support they gave to the team. It was a wonderful support. And also for all our teaming fans home and abroad, messages, prayers, and suggestions were welcomed. It actually motivated us in actually doing very well for the country. So on behalf of the club, I want to say a big thank you to everybody in Nigeria, that we are sorry that we did not meet our expectation. Hopefully we'll be back again for season 4, and we'll promise to do better.
That's Aziz Bello, secretary of Kwara Falcons Basketball Club, And Aziz spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Dakar, Senegal. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The Sunny Side of Sports remembers Hall of Fame basketball player Willis Reed, who died Tuesday at the age of 80. The AP's Tom Merriam reports.
The NBA is mourning the loss of Willis Reed, who died Tuesday at the age of 80. The Hall of Fame center led the Knicks to their only two NBA titles and is best remembered for his dramatic last-minute decision to play Game 7 of the 1970 Finals on a badly injured leg, scoring New York's first two baskets and leading the Knicks to their first-ever championship.
They come to the seventh game. We had the home court advantage back at Madison Square Garden. The question is whether or not Willis Reed would play or not, and basically the butcher came to me before the game. He said, if you can give us 20 minutes tonight, we're going to win this. I had a chance to go out on the floor, come out on the floor late, and Madison Square Garden steward and cheered, and it's almost like, well, everything's okay. The captain is here. Here I am playing against the best all-around big man to ever play the game, Wilt Chamberlain, on one leg, and that's really tough to do. And but as it would be under the circumstances, I go out and coming down the floor, I have the first two shots. I make both first two jump shots, and we go on. As an athlete, you know, you go through your whole career, and you, when I came to the league, never thought that we would ever be on a team that would win a championship, and I was lucky enough to be on that team, and it was something that will always stand out as a highlight from my career.
That's Hall of Fame basketball player Willis Reed, who died Tuesday at the age of 80. Willis capped in the New York Knicks to NBA championships in 1970 and 1973. Willis Reed was a seven-time NBA All-Star, and he was named the league's most valuable player in 1970. In NBA action Tuesday night, Orlando, Atlanta, New Orleans, Boston, Oklahoma City, and Cleveland were all winners. The Cleveland Cavaliers beat the Brooklyn Nets 115-109 in New York City. The AP's Mike Moriarty reports from New York.
Donovan Mitchell scored 31 points to lead the Cavaliers over the Nets 115-109. Mitchell hit 5 three-pointers and a fourth quarter highlight reel slam dunk in the Cavs 46 win, but says it could have been better.
They make certain shots, you know, down the stretch. You know, we don't win by 6 or 8, whatever it is. You know, it's a 1-point game. You know, everything gets a little tighter. Offensive rebounds, you know, they missed a few open shots, missed a bunch of threes tonight. You know, they may make some, you know, and that's ultimately what's the separator. So we got to continue to be consistent with what we do.
Caris LeVert added 18 points, while Darius Garland and Evan Mobley scored 17 apiece. De'Ron Sharp led Brooklyn with 20 points and 11 rebounds off the bench as the Nets dropped their 4th straight game. The two teams will play once again in Brooklyn on Thursday night. Mike Moriarty, New York.
Sporty greetings. This is Masai Ujiri, the president of Toronto Raptors Basketball, president of Giants of Africa Foundation. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Rain on me. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. I encourage our Sunny Side of Sports listeners to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Once again, my Twitter handle, @VOA Sunny Sports.
Sporty greetings. This is Liz Mills, head coach of Abidjan Basketball Club of Cote d'Ivoire. You are listening to Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, Coach. Now let's go to South Sudan, which recently made history by qualifying for the Men's FIBA Basketball World Cup in its first attempt. The South Sudanese are the first African team to book a World Cup ticket in their first qualifying campaign. For South Sudan's team captain, who was born a refugee, it's a fairy tale dream come true. Sheila Pony reports from Juba, South Sudan.
For Kwang Kwang, the idea of watching a South Sudanese team play at the top level was a far-fetched dream. Kwang was born in a refugee camp in Kenya. After his parents escaped war back at home, he will captain South Sudan at the team's maiden FIBA Basketball World Cup in Asia later this year.
I think every day we're out here, everyone is just telling us how great it is, and how proud the country is.
South Sudan will fly the African flag at the World Cup to be co-hosted by Japan, Indonesia, and the Philippines. This is a tremendous achievement for a country slightly over 10 years old. At the moment, South Sudan's Basketball Federation is headed by former NBA player Noel Deng. The country does not have a domestic league, and the men's national league team does not have a home gymnasium.
For us, it might have just been another game, another win, but to everybody else, and you know, to our families, and including us ourselves, it's way bigger than that. And I think to finally realize this dream after just 2-3 years is huge. I really can't put it into words. It's just something that a lot of people have always wanted to achieve.
Deng, just like the entire squad, has little physical connection to South Sudan. Most of the players have lived in foreign countries. But when Luol Deng took over the reins of basketball in 2019, the narrative changed. Deng could not hide his excitement of helping South Sudan pen such a glorious piece of history in his debut with senior national team.
Some of my other teammates, like their first time being in South Sudan, just being able to be welcomed by all these people, surely everyone want to come back. But yes, the best ever, man. I've never been supported my whole life like that. So it's an amazing feeling.
For a country that is plagued by tribalism and ethnic violence, sports fans such as Badil Abdallah, famously known as Kawaja, says sports has managed to walk the people through the trenches of war and succeeded where the political class have failed.
This basketball team is showing South Sudan as one people. We unite because of the basketball. This win will raise our name as South Sudan. We were known as people who like fighting all the time, but now basketball raised our name up and also brings peace among us.
Kwang grew up playing football in a refugee camp before his family relocated to Australia. He says he doesn't regret playing for South Sudan instead of his adopted country, Australia. Peter Abakar was a member of the Sudan basketball team for 10 years. Despite having relatively bigger resources in the then Sudan before the South seceded in 2011, the now Undersecretary for Ministry of Youth and Sports says South Sudan's World Cup qualification is an incredible achievement.
In Sudan, we never defeated Egypt in basketball. Whenever we get them on competitions, they were always winning. So for our national team to beat Egypt, a very experienced country in basketball twice and in their own country is amazing. They deserve from us all respect. To defeat the reigning African champion in basketball, consecutive years reigning champion in Africa, Tunisia, our boys did it. We are proud of them.
President Salva Kiir, who will be turning 72 in September, says he will personally attend at least one game in Asia in August. For the Sony side of sports, I am Sheila Pony in Juba.
Thanks, Sheila.
Sporty greetings, everyone. This is Ambassador Mary Onyale, Olympic medalist, five-time African champion in the sprint event. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
In African athletics, Ghanaian sprinter Benjamin Azamati is hoping to get on the podium at this year's World Championships in Budapest and at the 2024 Olympics in Paris. Yawafusu Larbi had a chance to chat with Benjamin, and Yao joins us now. Sporty greetings, Yao!
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Benjamin Azamati got to the Commonwealth Games with high hopes. After a great indoor year, sweeping records everywhere he turned, he did not have a great time at the Olympic Games that year. The Games, the biggest for every athlete, was too big a stage for the young athlete who had just started out and had gotten his first ever break on the world stage. But at the Commonwealth Games too, he could not deliver. It frustrated him heavily when he missed out on the 4x100 relay race, which was an event Ghana could have won a medal in. Now back in training after a long break, Azamati says he feels fresh and ready to go.
It's been good. I mean, the weather there has been really bad. I think a lot of people think Texas has good weather, but I mean, it really gets windy and then it gets really cold in here. And unfortunately for our school, we don't have any indoor facilities, so we have to, you know, do other stuff like biking and all that. But I mean, training has been good. Now the weather is becoming pretty good, so we're back on the track and then we are. Honestly, I feel good. I mean, I think this has been the best fall that I've had in terms of how I feel towards training and everything. And then also I'm working on my start, which has been pretty much good because I think in the indoor New Balance Grand Prix, I don't know if you saw that with Trayvon and Noah Laos. It was really good. I was right there with them. So I think it's something that is positive, something that I think ever since I started working on it, I've been good. And so we have to move on to other things like my 200. I'm really working on my 200 now, which will also, you know, benefit me in 100. So that has been the things that I'm focusing on. And then also, you know, my mentality and everything. I know I learned quite some things in World Champs and Olympics and everything. I think it's all mental. So that is what I'm actually working on.
In his very short athletic career, Azamati has been at the World Championships, the Olympics, the Commonwealth Games, the Diamond League, and is a gold winner in the 4x100 relay at the Africa Games. In this time, Azamati has not quite performed in international competitions he has been in. A lot of it largely because of his poor start to races, thereby losing steam to many of his opponents when the race gets into the dry phase. The 25-year-old says it had a lot to do with underestimating himself and over-respecting his opponents. He believes he is in the right frame of mind to trump it in future competitions.
One mistake I made was from when I transitioned into pro from college. I mean, when I was in college, these were the people that I was looking up to, people I was actually learning from and all that. So when I got to that stage, I was more of like a fan. You know, I mean, these are people you looked up to and now you're running with them. So I was kind of like, you know, still a fan, you know, and I felt like that was the mistake I made, being a fan and not being really competitive when I was on the big stage. But now everything has changed because we are all being sponsored. We all have to run to be able to, you know, get the money and all that. So my mentality has changed. When I go there, we all mean business. We all end up, we all want the money. We all want to run for our country. We all want to make our country proud. So, I mean, that has been the mentality. I think everybody's prepared, but what makes one win is how focused the person is and how, you know, mentally prepared the person is.
The World Championships are back in Budapest this year. It is a sport Azamati is eyeing closely. He wants to go there and make an impact, but first.
For the beginning, my coach and I want to, you know, run a couple of meets here in the USA to prepare me before I go to Europe to run a couple of the Diamond Leagues. And also this year, I think I'm going to be doing more of the 200s just for me to, you know, to be able to, you know, get my hands on the 200 too, because I want to double in the world champs. And for 100 meters, I think I'm ranked 18th now. So I think we're good with that. And then running the Diamond Leagues and all would help me, you know, with my ranking. And I have no doubt I'm also going to run the qualifying mark if the need be. And so, yeah, just running the big meets to prepare me for the World Championship come August.
Being ranked 18th in the world is like extremely huge. That's like the top 20 in the world. I mean, how does that make you feel? You know, just looking back to where you started from all the way to this point, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling. I mean, always I want to do stuff that will inspire people back home or even the athletes that are here with me in the United States. So it feels good. It feels amazing. I mean, I was just a nobody when I was in Ghana. And now I'm able to, you know, be ranked among the top guys in the world. So it feels good. It feels amazing to me. But there are things that when I look back, it motivates me to do more. I mean, I can be at the top one day. So there are things that really motivate me. And, you know, when you get to those big cities and everything, you don't just want to compete, but you also want to win something. So I'm ranked, and that's fine, and that's inspiring. But, you know, there are other things I also want to achieve, like getting a medal for my country.
In all of this, Asamati is looking to head back into the Olympic Games next year with a renewed sense of strength and a refreshed mind to blaze everyone else off the track. If Tokyo wasn't his great moment, he believes Paris will be better.
On a scale of 1 to 10, it's 10. Because I think Olympic is like the ultimate when it comes to track and field. So, yes, I want an Olympic medal. And I don't think any Ghanaian athlete has had that. And so, to be able to do it, I think it will be really, really amazing. And then that is what I'm actually working for, aside, you know, money to feed family and everything, and also to inspire the young people. I think getting a medal for your country is something big and something huge and something that will be very, very, very inspiring for the young generation.
For Benjamin, the sky is the limit. He has made a huge impact already in athletics in Ghana. But there is nothing he would want more than to become the first ever Olympic medalist for Ghana in athletics. For the sunny side of sports, this is Yao Fusilabi in Accra.
My name is Benjamin Azumati, a member of the quartet team that won gold for Ghana in the African Games that happened in Morocco, Rabat. You are listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
March is Women's History Month, and there's no better time to celebrate the accomplishments of women. Tell us about the woman that left positive marks in your life. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA is always happy to hear your voice. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Potential owners of Manchester United now have until Wednesday evening to submit a second offer to buy the prestigious English Premier League football club. The American owners, the Glazer family, have previously received offers to buy Man U. However, it's unlikely a club takeover will be completed before the end of the season. VOA's Gwen Uten joins us now with an update. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Manchester United is expected to receive several bids for the club before the submission deadline expires on Wednesday. However, just two parties have publicly placed their initial offers on the table. Qatari banker Sheikh Jassim bin Hamad Al Thani, who wants a full takeover of United and will reportedly make a second bid to buy the club on Wednesday, and Sir Jim Ratcliffe, a British billionaire who will offer to buy the Glazers' 69% share, but has said he will not pay a, quote, stupid price to acquire the club. Despite Ratcliffe's clear-cut declaration, his interest in acquiring United has been longstanding, as confirmed last month by seven-time Formula One world champion Lewis Hamilton.
I'm aware of where he is at, and we talk a lot about football, as he's very passionate about it, and we have great discussions just about what one of his team is doing. We talk about how Arsenal is playing. And obviously, he's from Manchester, so that's his a dream. That's his dream home. That's where he come from. But there's no further information I can give you on that.
Manchester United is currently owned by the six children of late American businessman Malcolm Glazer, who became the majority shareholder of the Premier League giants in 2005. Last November, the Glazer family put the club up for sale and are asking for a world record price of $7 billion U.S. dollars. United's impending takeover draws to a close a nearly two decades-long investment in one of the richest and most widely supported clubs in football. And it's the latest example of English football as an increasingly lucrative business proposition for global investors. Last May, Chelsea were sold for $5.4 billion to American businessman Todd Boehly. And football finance expert Neil Joyce says that sale helped set the bar even higher on the value of elite clubs.
Football is big, big business from an investment standpoint. There's been traditional ownership that's been more ego-driven or family-driven over the years. Now, with all the investment that's come into the Premier League in the more recent futures, so the likes of PIF acquiring Newcastle, Todd Boehly and his consortium buying Chelsea, they kind of set the threshold for what football clubs are worth. You then look at the traditional valuations of the NBA franchises going for anything between $3.5 billion to $4 billion in some cases. And the bar's been set in terms of value of sports teams and football teams in particular as brands.
Joyce is the co-founder and CEO of the CLV Group, a data company that recently published a report that outlines how investing in football has become big business. The Glazers could generate a return of at least six times their initial investment in United. And Joyce says that gives the siblings plenty of incentive to sell the club.
If you look at it from an investment perspective purely on this side of things, so traditionally, private equity companies invest into businesses with the belief that they can generate anywhere between 2 times to 4 times return on capital. If you look at the example of where Manchester United is likely to be sold for, the Glazers are likely to generate anywhere between 6 to 8 times return on their initial capital, even allowing for the interest payments, dividends, and also other shareholders involved there. So football is starting to show the benchmark about what could be possible.
Manchester United have won a record 20 league titles, lifted 3 Champions League trophies, and remain one of the world's most popular and marketable football clubs. United have returned to top form in the new campaign, and last month, manager Erik ten Hag told reporters he's not distracted by the prospect of a club takeover. His focus is on winning games.
Of course, we are committed, but we are focusing on football, on training, and our way of play, on games. And that is what we are focusing, and we really enjoy it in the moment in togetherness, and it's enjoyable to work. And yeah, we are focusing on games. So others in the clubs will have to take decisions, give efforts in the process, but it's not up to us.
In the past month, Man United have lifted the Carabao Cup trophy, knocked Barcelona out of the Europa League, and booked a spot in the FA Cup semifinals. And despite suffering a momentum-halting 7-0 Premier League defeat to Liverpool earlier this month, United have retained third place in the league table. After the international break, United will face Newcastle in their next Premier League match on Sunday, April 7th. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the March 22nd edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.